Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
A very highbrow conversation with the musicians.
Another classic way to celebrate the holiday season is with the Albany Symphony Orchestra. There will be two chances to see and hear the symphony and their holiday concert at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. Corelli's celebratory Christmas concerto with its charm and its cheer will be on display. Albany Symphony veteran composer Michael Torkey brings a world premiere cello concerto to the table, complemented by Bach's Orchestral Suite Number 1. There will also be Stravinsky on the program. We'll find out about it all with the maestro of the orchestra, David Alan Miller, who joins us. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Joe. It is so nice to be with you.
Very nice to have you with us. David has come with friends.
Two good friends.
Yes. The aforementioned composer, Michael Torkey, is with us. And the wonderful soloist for that cello concerto is Julie Albers. And Julie also joins us this morning. Thank you very much for being here. What a great pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. So, David, what are you up to?
Well, as I said to the orchestra at the end of the second rehearsal last night, this is the most beautiful all-Baroque program I have ever conducted in my whole life. And partly that's because only half of it's Baroque, but the other two pieces aren't actually Baroque. They aren't actually from the period, but they are in certain ways real homages to the era and to the sound world of the Baroque. So as you said, it's this gorgeous Corelli Christmas concerto, which is early Baroque and from about, I think, 1680 or so, like before Bach was born, and then the great Bach C major orchestral suite, so some very festive holiday, loosely holiday-themed music, and then these two...
What does that mean?
Well, the Christmas concerto was written to be performed on the night of Christmas, so that's holiday.
All right.
And to me, Baroque just... The holidays just say Baroque, or Baroque say the holidays. You know, when you think of the holidays, the soundtrack has a lot of Vivaldi and Pachelbel and things like that on
it.
So for me, being someone who really likes a lot of interest in my musical meals, the idea of also having Stravinsky's, we're actually doing the Pulcinella Suite, which is this incredible ballet that he wrote, that Diaghilev commissioned him to write, for which he took all these little-known Baroque pieces by Pergolesi and others, and he orchestrated them and Stravinskyized them. And so they're this fabulous sort of 20th century take on Baroque music. And then the culminating event of the whole evening and afternoon is this magnificent new cello concerto, work for cello and orchestra, that Michael wrote expressly for these concerts, Winter's Tale. We went through a lot of, Michael can tell you, it was initially based on the play The Winter's Tale and by Shakespeare, and then we thought maybe we'd call it A Winter's Tale, and I said, just call it Winter's Tale, and we'll keep it kind of vague. But it's a beautiful five-movement concerto that, again, owes a great deal to Baroque style and Baroque practice and kind of a Baroque sound, but very much in Michael's own contemporary language. And we're not only performing the pieces, giving the world premieres with this brilliant cellist, Julie Albers, who's a great friend of mine of the orchestras. She's been with us once before and is the newly appointed principal cellist of the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. But we're also recording the piece for Albany Records on Monday morning.
Wow.
Big weekend for us and very exciting. And the most, I have to tell your listeners, the most beautiful weekend before Christmas holiday program imaginable.
And what better place than at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, which is so gorgeous.
Yeah, Michael, you can speak to that. He was commenting on the incredible acoustics there.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a number of recordings over the years, and I should know this hall. It sounded to my ears completely different, much more warmer and reverberant than I remembered.
Well,
I was
it's
really
aging.
Pleased.
That wood is aging all the time.
Maybe that's
keeps
why.
Aging, like a great violin, like a great cello.
And all of us.
And all of us.
And all of us. That's
richer and richer,
thing.
I hope.
Yeah. So what is the, what was, how long have you been working on this
piece? Oh, all of 2014.
And what goes into that? I mean, and I asked
trial
this,
and error.
I asked this to mean, so like over a year. So does that mean 6 months into, you're about halfway through? Or doesn't it
work
that way?
Or I'm three-fourths of the way through and I think, you know what, this concept may not be working. Let's try something new. And then you start over.
And David alluded to this, but I'm curious as to how important the title is. And does that come at the end to identify it? Or do you need that as sort of the one thing that sort of centers you and said, okay,
well,
this is what we're going to create?
I work backwards. The music, I discover the music by the time I write the double bar. So for me, titles come last. But in today's classical music world, titles need to come first because programs have to be written and concepts have to be sold to the board and all that. And so David and I came up with the title, The Winter's Tale, before I had started. And then the piece kind of went in a different direction.
But it still, to me, has a great, and there are wonderful little quotes from the play at the beginning.
It is, I would say it's inspired by the play.
Inspired by, but not connected to.
But it doesn't illustrate the drama of the Shakespeare.
And is there a seasonal aspect, do you feel, to it?
Well, yeah. In fact, the opening quote that we use is a sad tale's best for winter, which Mamilius says. He's the son of King Leontes in a scene. And that always kind of struck me that there is this kind of, a melancholy, I would use a word, in winter, which the rebirth of spring delivers us out of.
But I would say something also, Joe, what's so interesting about this program is that essentially, well, not exactly, but all four of these composers use very similar forces, which are very small forces. I mean, Corelli just uses strings. The Bach uses strings plus two oboes, a harpsichord, and bassoon. Stravinsky uses a couple of additional instruments, but Michael hewed very closely to what Stravinsky used. So you're talking about a very small Baroque orchestra. You know, back in Bach's time, orchestras were much smaller and didn't have a lot of percussion and winds and such and brass. And so they have this, and the languages are very similar, even though they're writing at spans of, you know, starting in 1700 and going through this year. It's amazing how similar the languages are, and yet how Stravinsky and Michael happen to my belief, be two composers who have really distinctive voices. You turn on the radio, you hear Michael's music, you know it's Michael's music. You turn on the radio, you hear Stravinsky, you know it's Stravinsky. And so they both owe a great deal to Baroque. So just by virtue of the parameters we gave him in terms of the size of the orchestra, the pieces have a wonderful connectivity to each other. And yet they're very different from each other.
Talk a little bit, Michael, about the parameters of what you start off as, okay, this is what I'm dealing with.
Well, yeah, the romantic tradition is you have a theme and then you immediately try to find a contrasting theme. And I've always thought, if you have a great theme, why wouldn't you stick, you know, you're at a party on Saturday night. Do you just leave the party the minute you get there? And so I like
you do if you have tickets to the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall.
Yeah, miss the
there
concert.
You go.
Which you can still get at albany70.org.
Yeah, seats are still available.
That's right. albany70.com. Go ahead.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, David said sell it. So I'm just doing my part. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I like kind of the Baroque discipline of narrowing the range of expression and finding great freedom as a result.
Which is not dissimilar from what Bach did. You know, he takes one affect and in a movement explores that affect. And Michael finds great fascination in that as well. It's very interesting to sort of, I'm really interested to ask Julie, you know, in terms of I told her she had to do this, and she graciously agreed. And
you were told? You were asked? You were told?
I invited her.
Yes.
And I was
and
happy
it's
to.
A very challenging solo part. And, of course, it's never been played by anybody or heard by anybody, so she has nowhere to go to sort of learn it. So this whole process of how she digests something is complicated as this.
Well, I think from my perspective, it's interesting because I got the piece without really much premise. I mean, I knew the title. I had never actually spoken with Michael until a few weeks into getting the piece. Because
which was how long ago? What's the timeline?
I got it right at the beginning of November.
All right.
But it was interesting because then it gives me some time to kind of work through it and see what I think completely separately from what Michael thought, because I think that that's important, especially coming to a new piece, because I want to know what my conviction is first, and then I want to know what the premise is that I can then add to it. And speaking about kind of the Baroque side of things, it's written very motivically, which you don't find as much except in Baroque music. So to me, that's
which
the biggest
what?
Connection.
Which means what?
that he takes a certain grouping of notes, and that's kind of, you know, it's like a sentence. And he'll use that sentence and each time add like one new word or a different word that takes you a different place, but it's still kind of the same general sentence, musically speaking. Instead of developing these long lines that have, you know, 15 sentences that then make this paragraph of all these different thoughts. So does that describe
that? Yeah, and again, that's a very Baroque idea of these very little modules that the composer then spins into a much bigger work. And it's beautiful in that there's this continuity to it that sometimes is missing from high romantic music.
I'm fascinated by the given that it is often rare, not always, but it is often rare that you have the composer in the room with you as you're doing these pieces. Albany Symphony more so.
Because I always have the composer in the room. Yes. Even the dead composer shows.
Yes, well, I know. I know you have
my wife gets very alarmed.
That power and ability, which we all praise you for. But what I'm interested in is because obviously, Julie, you listen to it and you say, okay, well, this is what how I hear it. This is how I and this is what I can do physically and artistically with the work. And then how much do you yield to that, Michael, and say, okay, that...
Well, it's not even yielding. I welcome it. I mean, what we don't understand is the common practice that goes into the big concertos like the Dvorak. If Dvorak just handed that over to a cellist, it would sound very different. It would sound very kind of square and not dainty, but kind of polite. Because over the years, a performance practice has developed of pushing this phrase here, and we take that all for granted. So if a new piece is going to work and be expressed through the performer, they have to really push it in places that a composer might not even imagine.
And apropos of that, Michael heard Julie play it last night for the first time just before we put her together with the orchestra. And I must say that he was quite overwhelmed by the magnificence of her playing. And I kept saying to him, because I always like the composer to play it through at the piano for me or sing it for me so I can get sort of his or her idea in my head as they understand it. But Julie hadn't done that. She'd spoken to him on the phone, but she hadn't actually exchanged musical phrases with him. And I said, why don't you play some of it on the piano for her? He said, she doesn't need to hear it from me. It's so great. It's better than I could play it for her. So
yeah,
it was really quite wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And then you're along. I don't want to dismiss your contributions here. Yes,
but I've done so much of Michael's music from all his periods. I played his second orchestra piece, Bright Blue Music. I mean,
so you get it.
I have it in me. So yeah, I have to sort of dust it off in my head in terms of knowing what kinds of things he favors, as unlike another composer B, C, or D. But once I sort of hear it and work on it, it comes back to me, and then I sort of know his parameters. But we had long aesthetic discussions this week and last week about his piece and what he's trying to achieve in it.
I love. I know you and I, David, we've talked about this, but I'm interested in Michael and Julie's thoughts on this. Is there an electric electricity that comes with, from an audience perspective, of being in on something for the first time, of having that, we're hearing this being created before us?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think that audiences are more on the edge of their seat with something new. They have no idea what's coming. And if the composer accomplishes keeping their attention, it's the most exciting thing. It's like seeing a new play or a new movie. I mean, you know, we have always liked the new. I don't know why that's an odd concept for classical music, because everywhere else we want the latest movie.
That's interesting. Yeah. Julie,
what do you think?
I mean, I think that there's something so unique about it, because to come in with no expectations is something that we don't do in our life very frequently. I mean, even if you think about with movies, we see the previews. We know if we want to, you know, if we want to.
We know a fair bit about them before. Yeah,
exactly. So. And with a new piece, a lot of times you don't know anything. You're sitting down at the concert and you have no idea. I mean, maybe you have an idea of the composer's previous music, you know, like his library, his catalog of music. But you know nothing about this. And so it's unique in that way.
Which is wonderful. That's where trust comes in, of trusting the orchestra that you and why that the period and the detail of, okay, this is our Baroque program, this is what we're doing, and trusting you, trusting the orchestra that this is something, this is the journey we're going to go on.
But in addition to that, Michael Torkey is very famous.
Yeah, well, right.
He's one of the most famous living composers, and people hear him on the radio all the time. And the reason he's famous is not only because his pieces are so good, but his pieces are so appealing that radio stations play them constantly. Bright Blue Music, this piece that I commissioned 20, 30 years ago, is a good example of that. And so what's beautiful about this piece, in addition to its own uniqueness, is that it's incredibly first drawer Torkey. So it's a chance to hear something that for a listener
sorry,
who knows anything
first
about
drawer Torkey,
it's
top, is that what you
it's
said?
Top shelf drawer Torkey. It's just this magnificent 25.
There's your
minute.
Headline times. You
there it is, top drawer Torkey. It's really exciting, and it's like hearing a brand new masterpiece. Fantastic. To me, it's very exciting.
Well, it is exciting. There will be two chances to see and hear the Albany Symphony Orchestra's wonderful concert at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall. It's Saturday night at 7:30.
It is.
And then Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Uh-huh. And you can find out more information by going to the website, which is albanysymphony.com, albanysymphony.com. And it is a great pleasure. David, always wonderful to see you. Have a blessed holiday season. I thank you very much, as always, for being here.
You too, Joe. And thanks so much for having me and my friends. And it's just the most wonderful way to spend the weekend before Christmas or the holidays. If you're a Hanukkah person, it's a great, great weekend fun thing.
If you're a Hanukkah person...
like me.
Top shelf Torkey.
That's right.
Michael. Michael Torkey and Judy Albers, thank you very much for being here. Have a wonderful
Thank you for
weekend.
Having
thank
us.
Thank you.
Thank
nice
you
to
so
be here.
Much. A delight. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.